Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, a weekly magazine format public affairs program on exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. Exopolitics Radio can be heard on 1480 KPHX, Progressive Talk Phoenix, and worldwide on the internet at www.exopoliticsradio.com. And you can visit our audio archives, which remain free and open to the public 24/7 at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, and this week, as we continue in our creative hiatus between Season 2 and Season 3, we are continuing with Part 2 of our interview on galactic diplomacy with our commentator, Paula Harris. Before going on to our interview, we have an official Exopolitics Radio commentary, and I guess the commentary could be in the department of, gee, enough's enough, or basta ya, and they result from the comments or the public position of one of the candidates for First Lady of the United States, the wife of Representative Dennis Kucinich, who became public, ironically, on October 30th, 2007, becoming the first candidate to admit publicly that he had seen a UFO on national television during a debate. And the comments and position of his wife, Elizabeth Kucinich, who's taken a very special person, kind of another one of the, quote, co-presidents in the campaign with regard to the extraterrestrial issue. And this is a very delicate issue because, you know, couples within a marriage have different positions on issues, and it's a free will universe. And when you're voting for a president, you're voting for that president and not necessarily for the views of his wife. But in this case, his wife is making almost as many public speeches as the candidate and has made it clear that her public views will be an integral part of the Kucinich candidacy. And so let's hear first the exact words of Elizabeth Kucinich following the Drexel debate. Here is Elizabeth Kucinich speaks out about the UFO question. We're playing back this video here, filmed by Chris Barrett. Yes, yes, here we go.
Well, you know, they always try to belittle Dennis, and that's fine, you know, but UFO means unidentified flying object. And,
I mean, you take it, in other words, do you think it's fun or do you think it's a waste of time?
I think it's fun. It's also a waste of time when there's really important things that we should be talking about here on the debate. Really important things that really affect everybody in America. War, trade, jobs, healthcare. And that's what we need to focus on. And not only with a few candidates, everybody has to be involved, because that's called the democracy and that's called knowing your real choice. Thank you.
So, yeah, let's play that again, because it was very kind of brief.
Well, you know, they always try to belittle Dennis, and that's fine, you know, but UFO means unidentified flying object. And,
I mean, you take it, in other words, do you think it's fun or do you think it's a waste of time?
I think it's fun. It's also a waste of time when there's really important things that we should be talking about here on the debate. Really important things that really affect everybody in America. War, trade, jobs, healthcare. And that's what we need to focus on. And not only with a few candidates, everybody has to be involved, because that's called the democracy and that's called knowing your real choice. Thank you.
Yeah. And you recall that this is Exopolitics Radio, and that our mission is to examine public affairs as they involve relations between our terrestrial civilization and advanced extraterrestrial civilizations. So here we have Elizabeth Kucinich, who is saying, oh, and this was just right after her husband was questioned as to whether he had seen a UFO. And she's saying, oh, I believe that UFOs, in other words, extraterrestrials and UFOs are, quote, a waste of time. They are a waste of time. There are more important issues. In other words, in her own mind, she does not have any sort of an in-depth position and has no determined understanding of the role that advanced extraterrestrial civilizations are playing at this time in attempting to transform the permanent war economy, which is fueled by the petroleum and nuclear civilization. Nor does she have any understanding about the fleets of ARVs, or advanced alien reproduction craft, that the black budget economy of $1.5 billion a year has created. So it's clear that her husband, Representative Dennis Kucinich, has not briefed her whatsoever on the significance of the extraterrestrial presence, because her views are the views of an extraterrestrial skeptic, or what we could call an extraterrestrial debunker. In other words, oh, UFOs? Well, those are a waste of time. We really don't know what they are, and they are not relevant to issues of war, peace, and poverty. Whereas, in fact, it is advanced extraterrestrial civilizations that have ever since the United States used nuclear weapons in 1945, have reportedly met with the U.S. presidents attempting to, with Dwight D. Eisenhower, attempting to have them terminate the U.S. nuclear weapons program. We've had one specific group of extraterrestrials engage in a secret human extraterrestrial liaison program from at least the 1960s forward, in which they've transferred advanced technologies to the U.S. military intelligence, including by the testimony of Jim Sparks and other whistleblowers, advanced time travel, teleportation, and other propulsion technologies that has helped keep the U.S. military industrial complex in power. So here we have a, quote, progressive power couple, Representative Dennis Kucinich and his wife, Elizabeth Kucinich, where Elizabeth Kucinich was asked point blank after the debate, what are your attitudes on UFOs? And she says, oh, it's a waste of time. So it's clear that she has the attitude of an ET UFO debunker, or at least skeptic, and it's clear that Dennis Kucinich, who is knowledgeable in these matters, I know because I personally spent a day driving around Toronto, Canada with him in November of 2002 when we were both speakers at the CUSP conference at the convention center in Toronto, and specifically asking him questions on the extraterrestrial presence. So that apparently Kucinich does not feel that he has a public responsibility to develop such a position to either brief his wife, who is now taking the position of almost a co-president. Now, why do I say that? I say that because Elizabeth Kucinich has now, in the course of the campaign, has been deployed to various states in which she has been giving speaking engagements on her own and taking policy positions in these speaking engagements on her own. And in fact, at joint speaking engagements, it is Dennis Kucinich who is introducing Elizabeth Kucinich. And at the Democratic presidential debates, after the debates, when most of the presidential spouses simply go up to the stage and kind of, you know, stand there and mingle, Elizabeth Kucinich seeks out broadcast journalists and other journalists to begin to be interviewed and make policy statements. And in fact, she reportedly at this same debate has gotten her husband in something of political hot water by going out and making a policy statement that her husband would be very happy to become the running mate of the Republican candidate for President Ron Paul. And that was a policy position which had not been discussed within the Kucinich campaign prior to that. So here we have Elizabeth Kucinich making policy positions for the Kucinich campaign, so that one could presume that once the Kucinich presidency, if he were elected president, once the Kucinich administration came into office, that on significant issues like this issue, Elizabeth Kucinich would carry a lot of weight. And yes, you guessed it, if it came to the extraterrestrial disclosure issue, what would be her opinion? Her opinion would be that, quote, it is a waste of time. Well, let's listen to what Dennis Kucinich said just a few minutes earlier to what you just heard from Elizabeth Kucinich. Here is Dennis Kucinich speaking again.
Congressman Kucinich, I want to move to a different area because this is a serious question. The godmother of your daughter, Shirley MacLaine, writes in her new book that you sighted a UFO over her home in Washington State, that you found the encounter extremely moving, that it was a triangular craft, silent and hovering, that you felt a connection to your heart and heard directions in your mind. Now, did you see a UFO?
I did, and the rest of the account, it was unidentified flying object, okay? It's like, it's unidentified. I saw something. Now, to answer your question, I'm moving my, it's, and I'm also going to move my campaign office to Roswell, New Mexico, and another one in Exeter, New Hampshire, okay? And also, you have to keep in mind that more, that Jimmy Carter saw a UFO, and also that more people in this country have seen UFOs and I think approve of George Bush's presidency.
Actually, four.
And so, wait, we're just getting started here.
No. I mean, so, we have about 14% of Americans say they have seen UFOs. I'm going to move past.
What was the percentage?
14%.
What was that percentage?
14.
Thank you.
I want to see, I'm going to ask Senator Obama a question in the same line.
Right. So that was a serious question. Now, compare this once again with Elizabeth Kucinich's answer to that serious question.
Well, you know, they always try to belittle Dennis, and that's fine, you know, but UFO means unidentified flying object. And,
I mean, in other words, do you think it's fun or do you think it's a waste of time?
I think it's fun. It's also a waste of time when there's really important things that we should be talking about here on the debate. Really important things that really affect everybody in America. War, trade, jobs, healthcare. And that's what we need to focus on. And not only with a few candidates, everybody has to be involved. But that's called the democracy and that's called knowing your real choice. Thank you.
You know, that's very much in the tradition. If Elizabeth Kucinich is campaigning for First Lady, she is a person who is campaigning for a public office, or at least her husband is. And First Lady is a quasi-public office. She has a huge public staff. She represents the U.S., and it really is a quasi-public office. And in that sense, I would submit that that answer is functionally the equivalent of a continuation of the cover-up. That answer is to say that it's a waste of time when the presidential candidate, your husband, was just asked a serious question, and then to say that that's a waste of time is a signal that you are continuing and that your administration will continue the extraterrestrial cover-up. Now, let's go and let's examine just a bit. Let's go into the background of Elizabeth Kucinich and see what's in her background that may have contributed to these attitudes, because I think that there's some things in her background that she is definitely playing out here. I'm looking at the Wikipedia biography of her, which, you know, admittedly is not a complete source, but it's at least sets out some of the facts. And she has a, you know, she's 30 years old, was born on October 22nd, 1977. And I'm not beating up on her as a person. I'm going to issues here. Elizabeth originates from North Ockenden in London, England. In 1996, she went to Agra, India to volunteer at one of Mother Teresa's homes for India's poorest children. That's very good. I was in Mumbai and that's extremely poor. Upon earning her bachelor's and master's degrees at the University of Kent, she spent 16 years in a rural Tanzanian village and worked as an advocate for regional development. That's very admirable. After leaving Tanzania, she volunteered with the British Red Cross refugee unit, earned a certificate in peace studies from Coventry University, and got a job as a fundraiser for a seafarers charity in London. Here's where it starts to get dicey. Her volunteer work often brought her to the House of Lords. At the time, she heard financial analyst Stephen Zarlenga speak about monetary reform. She was impressed and soon was hired to become Zarlenga's assistant at the Chicago-based American Monetary Institute. That work took her and Zarlenga to Dennis Kucinich's office. She married Dennis Kucinich in 2005 in Congressman Dennis Kucinich's hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. Okay, so that's Elizabeth Kucinich's background. The House of Lords is, for all practical purposes, the political epicenter of the City of London, which is a 677 quasi-independent jurisdiction ruled by a committee of 12 banks mediated by the House of Rothschild, which for centuries has funded and financed the permanent war economy, and which funds and whose North American arm is the Rockefeller Empire, whose net worth is about $10 trillion compared to $100 trillion for the House of Rothschild Empire in the UK. And from what I've heard of the inside of the Kucinich campaign, when Elizabeth Kucinich came, this was one of, they called, the May to December weddings, where Elizabeth was 30 and Dennis, I think, is somewhere between 57 and 60. The Kucinich campaign was taken over by insiders from the City of London and from the kind of Oxford City of London, people like Michael Carmichael, who I met at the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Conference. These are British intellectuals of a globalist ideological persuasion. And all of the grassroots workers at the high levels in the Kucinich campaign were expelled. And there has been a lot of bad feelings in the Dennis Kucinich campaign. And essentially, it has been a globalist-run campaign. Dennis has been forced to drop many of the issues except kind of world peace. And his campaign site shows this. And the hostility, calling it, quote, a waste of time, that Elizabeth Kucinich has toward the disclosure issue is very reminiscent of the hostility that British City of London, Oxford-based globalists have toward the disclosure issue. And they're the people that dominate the Kucinich campaign. So I'm doing an exopolitical analysis here of how it is, the irony, that Dennis Kucinich, who the godmother to his children was Shirley MacLaine, who is one of the champions of the American disclosure movement and consciousness movement. Dennis Kucinich, who himself has had some sort of a UFO experience. We could call him an experiencer. A person who I know has had, and I've, you know, talked to him, who's been a champion of space preservation, and who I know has had deep consciousness experiences. The irony that he started running for president, and that you would think that he would be the disclosure president. And yet, we have him in 2007. First of all, when Shirley MacLaine, as a champion of disclosure, with all of her courage, made that revelation in the October 30th debate, which then forced everyone else in the U.S. presidential race, in the 2008 U.S. presidential debate, to declare themselves on one side of the issue or the other, except one person so far. And that person is Hillary Clinton. And we here at Exopolitics Radio had a story on the Freedom of Information documents in just the last several weeks, which I urge you to go back and listen to, because Hillary Clinton, it turns out, we now know from Freedom of Information Act letters, was the White House pivot point for extraterrestrial disclosure in the first Clinton White House. But at least what you can say is that Hillary Clinton intellectually took on this issue straight on. And if you look at the letters that went back and forth between she and Lawrence Rockefeller, they were substantive letters with some intellectual merit to them and some policy merit to them. They weren't sort of the shallow and callow dissing that the City of London, Oxford, you know, continuation of the disclosure cover-up that happened when Elizabeth Kucinich came on after her husband's, again, rather shallow and dismissive answer to the question that was made, that was posed to him, he did not go on to give a platform to disclose his exopolitics platform, which he could have and gone into depth. And here we have Elizabeth Kucinich parroting and giving what the City of London, Oxford, sort of UK cover-up answer would be, oh, they're a waste of time when there would have been so many other issues. No, Mrs. Kucinich, it's not a waste of time, and you should have your husband brief you on the depth of why upper-dimensional ethical extraterrestrials have been meeting with U.S. presidents since 1945 to attempt to have them stop the U.S. nuclear weapons program so that we don't despoil the biosphere. And you should have your husband brief you on how one specific species of extraterrestrials has been engaged in secret extraterrestrial liaison programs with the U.S. military intelligence, in which U.S. military intelligence has appropriated advanced teleportation and time travel technology that was given to them for the benefit of the biosphere, and how we need a truth amnesty program to bring this to the public. And that, in our opinion, at Exopolitics Radio, a couple that has not had that conversation and that has perpetuated this shallow, callow continuation of the disclosure cover-up using Oxford City of London, you know, dismissal of it's a waste of time, does not deserve to be presidency, to achieve the presidency on the disclosure issue. And I would urge those of you who are thinking about Denis Kucinich on the exopolitics ticket to really deeply consider your votes. This has been an Exopolitics Radio official commentary on the Kucinich ticket. And please stay tuned for our interview part two with Paula Harris on galactic diplomacy. Thank you. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. You're listening to Exopolitics Radio. We'll be right back.
Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber.
Welcome back to Exopolitics Radio. This is your host, Alfred Weber. We're with Paula Harris, author of Exopolitics, How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light, and our Exopolitics Radio commentator. Thank you. Now, we're dealing with very many different classes of beings and also dimensional beings, i.e., ultra-dimensional beings, upper-dimensional beings, balls of light. Could you talk a bit about the more upper-dimensional or balls of light experience, things that people normally associate with the more, quote, spiritually evolved extraterrestrial experiences?
Well, I'll talk about three cases, three particular. The Uri Geller is a good friend of mine, and he explained that at the age of three, he was actually beamed in the forehead by a light being. He saw a ball of light. It turned into a being, and he was beamed in the forehead, and that's where he got his powers. Now, after all these years, Uri has found a witness who was in the park that saw this and is coming forth in Israeli television and talking about this. So this is not a human being. This is not a gray. This is a ball of light that turns into a light being. That was number one. Number two, in my book, I talk about the situation in Catania in southern Italy, in Sicily, where these intelligent balls of light are coming out of the water. It looks like they have a base. They go into the house. They go around the pets, around the people, and they interact with the electrical appliances in the house. And what it appears to be, and it's been on our news, is self-combusting houses, but that's not the case, because they've turned the electricity off and they still have this phenomenon. When you have to move 144 people out of a small town in southern Italy, it becomes, for me, a protocol issue. It becomes something other than just an accident. And these balls of light haven't hurt anybody. They haven't burned anybody. They haven't done any damage to the people, but they have to the homes. So that kind of situation, plus the orb phenomenon, I've had people that have said they've meditated, and when they open their eyes, there are orbs in the room. And some of the photographs I have in my book show these orbs after meditation or in special occasions. There's one on the chest of Stephen Greer. I mean, it's not in my book, it's in black and white, but the actual slide is part of my PowerPoint, and it's in color. I mean, sometimes there are dimensions that are intelligent. And I go to talk about the fast walkers or the orbs that NASA has seen around the space shuttle, the ones that interacted with the tether. There were over 100 orbs that were interacting around the tether they lost in STS-75 that Robert Miles has coined as fast walkers that we have seen in the fast walker DVD. So they're intelligent. They're pulsating. They're not amoeba. So I'm thinking, okay, they're intelligent. It's a life form. It could be a craft. Now, can we please look at how to communicate with that? And, of course, the answer to the statement in my book, how do you speak to a ball of light, is telepathically. I mean, you speak to an alien telepathically, too. Obviously, he's not going to learn your language. He usually uses a flash image. I mean, look at all the contact all over the world. You mean aliens learn every language on the planet? They use a telepathic form of ESP that we need to develop. And this is probably the bottom line in that chapter.
Right. There are then many different types of extraterrestrials with many different agendas and different dimensional beings on the planet. One thing that has emerged with regard to the U.S. government secrecy has to do with what we can call, quote, the small grays and the, quote, abduction experience, and which we call an educational outreach experience. And we've had guests on the program like Jim Sparks, who, as you know, was, quote, abducted for 18 years by a small grays race, a specific race, comma, and at the same time, this race seemed to have been the same race that was engaged in top secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs with the U.S. government, specifically in time travel and teleportation programs, because Sparks was shown a rudimentary form of the teleportation and of the time travel technology at a U.S. military base in a couple of his abductions. So that there are very specific protocols, it seems, to get through very specific problems, like the issue of UFO secrecy with the U.S. military. It seems like they want to keep hold of the monopoly that they have on this advanced weaponry. Would you see that as the case?
I think that's the reason for the secrecy, but there's also other reasons. I think that it just affects every single part of our existence, and the economic part is the worst. I mean, I remember my talks with Dr. Michael Wolf-Kruvan, and I will be writing a book about him next. He said to me, Paula, you can't tell the world until you replace it with something. It's like pulling the rug out from under them, and they are happy in their, you know, oblivion, and you go and you tell them that everything is not the way they believe it is. and you need to replace it with something else. Well, his idea and my idea is you have to replace it with a higher level of spirituality. And right. and with that, you're going to be okay, because what happens is that you finally understand that you're part of a cosmic culture. You are not just walking around here with material goods, and that's all you are, and it's over. You are part of an everlasting life, a cosmic culture, a divine plan, and there are others like there out there just like you who are trying to knock on the door and say, look, you people are cosmic galaxy. I mean, you're part of a cosmic neighborhood. But the way that the planet is structured, and Paul Hallier talked about this too, we're structured on a monetary base. It's very, very destructive to try to undo what we've done, because I think it's, not only the monetary, but, you know, the religious, you know, there's a lot of problems. If we look at our history, maybe what we thought was the way it was in the past is not, maybe the Greek gods were not Greek gods, but extraterrestrials. I know there on the island of Sardinia, we have skeletons of huge giants. And they don't want to talk about that. Archaeology doesn't want to address that because it doesn't fit into any box, any particular box. So what happens if you have to rewrite your history? You have to redo your economics. You have to redo your governments. We become one species, and, it just changes everything. So I think that's where we stand to lose. And the trouble is, I don't think we have a choice. I think that these people, all the different kinds of cosmic people, are making it clear that they want to be known.
Right, which brings us to your ninth and last protocol, which is you call galactic diplomacy. And that's sort of a different from international cooperation that really begins to get toward the universal consciousness that you're talking about and the agape-centered. Agape meaning being the Greek word for cosmic love. And apparently the higher order civilizations are more centered on the power of universal love and the physics of universal light. And I wondered if you could talk about that. I know that you just touched on it, but from a protocol point of view.
Well, you know, everybody says, well, I want to see these people, and I want to see, and, you know, how can I do it? Well, the end of my book, I have an interview with Stephen Greer, who is the most successful in the galactic protocols as far as citizen diplomacy. He started a long time ago. Everybody should read Stephen Greer's new book, everybody, because it showed that when he was a young man, what he did was place himself somewhere, introduce himself, say, my name is Stephen Greer, I am standing here at this altitude, in this place, and I would like to meet you. I mean, these meeting or interacting with beings when they're invited into your consciousness is the only way to have galactic diplomacy. It isn't we're all going to sit at the United Nations table, all of us, and, like, shake hands with everybody. That isn't. I don't see it happening that way. The C-SETI protocols, for me, are the most successful. They are incredibly well done, and they include a lot of spirituality. Stephen does a lot of transcendental meditation. He does a lot of different things to prepare people, you know, peacefully for galactic protocols. And then I've got the Hawaii Declaration in there, Alfred. We were all together, if you remember, with Ambassador John McDonald, with Paul Hallier, with you, with Mary Rodwell, and we all decided to draft up a welcome kind of, welcome if you're benevolent, welcome type of protocol to, and even drafting that up, somebody on another level was watching us do that. That's the only way that we're going to be able to show that, no, we're not going to shoot you, no, you know, we're not going to just assume that you're evil. We're going to try our best to integrate, because it's going to be hard for the planet, but there are those of us that would like to integrate. And on that note, Alfred, I would like to also mention some of our friends in Europe who really believe the same thing and are trying to do the same kind of thing.
Well, you know, as we speak and as these words are being broadcast on Saturday, September 15th, 2007, you and I and many of our listeners are in Washington, D.C. at the X Conference. And we're there to try and bring everything to the tipping point so that we have a process of disclosure happening. And one of the most powerful insights for me was when we went through the Jim Sparks material and we had Jim Sparks on, and I know that you have interviewed him also because I heard that very excellent interview, but they went on to what we can call state the truth amnesty disclosure process. And that is that there are people within the national security state who want disclosure, but they are so caught up within possible criminal liability. And this was on the recommendation of the small grays who have been involved with the Jim Sparks, with the abduction, with the technology transfer programs, stating that, look, you need a South Africa-style truth amnesty process where people come forward and tell the truth. They're given amnesty from criminal prosecution, and that's what is going to get disclosure. And that's a proposal that I'm going to be bringing to the X conference. And I wondered if you could talk a bit about that.
Well, I have a question. The amnesty would come from where? Because as we know, a lot of the secrecy is the black budget problem. You know, the group that we've named the cabal, that group that knows. Because a lot of the politicians, I remember Colonel Corso said to me, he said, you know, the government isn't bad. They don't even know what's going on. Half of them don't even know this. They're so busy doing their thing.
So that, I guess what we're doing is they call it MSU, making stuff up. This is a case of first impression. So we're going to have to get together and make these rules. But the truth amnesty process might work something like this. That we would get an executive, a president or a Congress or some jurisdiction, if not the U.S., that would grant amnesty from criminal prosecution to individuals who would come forth to state and to allow this black budget material to come forward. And that's one way of unearthing these extremely compartmentalized programs which have been ongoing for the last 60 years. Now, there's some very, very brave, both you and I, courageous whistleblowers that have come forth from the black budget areas over the course of the past 60 years to tell us about these amazing quantum technologies and experiences that are going on there. But that the whole kind of social process of disclosure, one way of doing it, it has been suggested, is a truth amnesty process.
Well, I agree 100%, but the first thing I'd like to see is that they use the word UFO. I mean, I would like to see less ridicule, especially when we deal with it in the United States. I think the Larry King live show was incredible because it was aired several times, but yet somebody brought the little green plastic dolls there. We need to stop commercializing this as some kind of game. It is darn serious. It is something that has to do with the future, with policy issues. If we'd stop wearing the T-shirts and the antenna and everything that's around this and look at this as something that we need to deal with, especially here in the United States, then I think we would look at it in a serious way. I lived in Europe, so I know we don't do that. But here I look around and it's like a joke.
Right. I agree. Oh, you know something? I just want to mention something, Paula, because it was on my last page here. We have a new exopolitics chapter in the making in the Philippines, and Ted Antimer is very active there and will be meeting with members of the Philippine Senate on the Philippine Exopolitics Initiative in the very near future. So I just wanted to put that out there and on the air. So things are moving very, very quickly. So we don't know exactly what format this process will take, but as we say, the cosmic trigger has been pulled as of the year 2000 when the exopolitics model first went public, and the rate of acceleration since then has really quickened.
It has, and thanks to Canada. I will also say, thank you, Victor Vigiani, Michael Bird, you, Paul Hellyer, and Canada for being the front leaders in this exopolitics movement.
And thanks to you, Paula, because I think that you, over these many years, really have held up a solitary light there in Europe. So we've come again to the end of a very exciting segment. You are our sort of our world traveling Exopolitics Radio commentator, and we want to thank you for being such and for having come on to the program, and we look forward to having you your reports again in the future.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Great. This is Alfred Weber and Exopolitics Radio. We've been with Paula Harris, author of the book Exopolitics, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? And member of the Exopolitics Institute. Her website is www.paulaharris.com. We want to thank you for being on this program and for being an Exopolitics Radio commentator. And we hope to have you on here again soon to give you the benefit and have us have the benefit of your wisdom and your research. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. You know, I was we were talking during the break with our stellar artistic director, R.V. Romero, and we really want to make it clear that at Exopolitics Radio, what we do is we analyze current exopolitical trends, we analyze politics, we analyze extraterrestrial issues, extraterrestrial developments, we analyze developments in terrestrial politics from an exopolitics perspective, and we do not endorse any political candidates. So nothing said in any Exopolitics Radio program is an endorsement of any political candidate. And I just wanted to say that very clearly. Nothing said in an Exopolitics Radio program is an endorsement of any political candidate. This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix, executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director R.V. Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and enlightened, disclosure-positive, political candidate-enriched day, week, and life. Thank you.